clear into the stretch, and American Ferrell makes his run for glory as they come into the final furlong. Frosted is second with 1/8 of a mile to go. American Ferrell's got a two-length lead. Frosted is all out at the 16th pole. And here it is. The 37-year wait is over. American Ferrell is finally the one. American Ferrell has won the Triple Crown.
On June 6, 2015, history was made when the epic thoroughbred American Ferrell won the Belmont Stakes and secured the Triple Crown title, becoming the first racehorse in 37 years to achieve this momentous feat and only the 12th winner in American history. American Ferrell, the untold story of the Triple Crown winner's legendary rise by New York Times sports writer Joe Drape, the preeminent turf writer in America, is the definitive account of not only how this legendary colt won the Triple Crown, but how he changed lives. Again, the name of the book is American Ferrell, the untold story of the Triple Crown winner's legendary rise. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Joe Drape back to the roundtable. Joe, how are you?
I am great.
What is it about this particular horse, you've been in this game for a very long time, that changed you to want to write a book about this horse and the ride that you had been on for the past really 2 years?
37 years. It was the first time in 37 years, which resonates with everybody. And as anybody who's at Belmont that day and watched the television ratings bounce from there on through to the Travers, people want to see a transcendent achievement. They want to see greatness. They want to say, I've been there. I've seen it. Now, I've sat in that press box at Belmont for 18 years, and I think eight had come through winning two of the three. And all I wanted to do was write the Triple Crown story for the New York Times, for posterity, get it out of my system, you know, say, okay, I saw it, I did it. But when he turns for home, and there's just a soul-quaking thunder that goes up, because they know he's going to win. It's pretty clear nobody's going to catch him. And it's the only sporting event I've ever been at. And I've been fortunate to be Olympics, championships, you name it, where every single person, every 100,000 people there at Belmont Park, the millions watching, were cheering for the same thing. They wanted him to win. They wanted him to sweep the Triple Crown. So I didn't really think about writing a book until after that. And, you know, we all look at the stories as they come through. We're chronicling them in real time. The previous year, you had California Chrome, this very inexpensive horse by first-time owners, by an old trainer who is a likable, lovable guy, Art Sherman, and this will be the best horse in his life. You know, as we chronicled this one, you had an interesting crew. You had Bob Baffert, who everybody knows, who's a Hall of Famer, who people were kind of tired of. He had been shut out of the Triple Crown races more or less for the last decade. He'd had some problems in California with horses dying under mysterious conditions. He had suffered a heart attack in Dubai that changed his life. He had an 11-year-old son. And, you know, when you go back and look at all this stuff and start talking to him, you realize what an interesting arc he and his career are. And, you know, he's a guy who started out as a quarter horse trainer in Arizona, not a very good one. His dad took a horse away from him once to train himself because he wasn't winning, and how he adjusted and went through the highs and the highs and the lows and the lows. You had this terrific owner, Ahmed Zayat, a guy who is an Orthodox Jew who made his fortune in Egypt, selling beer to the Muslims. He was Egyptian. That's where he grew up. Besides this, like, passionate zest for life, he gambles. He's a gambler. He's like what you would expect in the horse racing circles, $200,000 a week. You know, he was in the midst of a bankruptcy, Joe. He needed money. He owed the banks $34 million. He owed his trainers. And then you have this Victor Espinoza, who is sort of a accidental jockey. He was a young guy out of Mexico, 1 of 10, teenager. The only way he had out to make a living was to learn about horses. He was afraid of horses. He didn't really like them. And he doesn't even end up on American Ferrell as the first choice. He's Baffert's fifth choice after Martin Garcia rode him in the debut, and it didn't go well. He didn't want to get back on him. Gary Stevens, who's on More Spirit in this upcoming Derby for Baffert, he was getting his knees replaced. Rafael Bayrano and Mike Smith, two guys Bob Baffert rides a lot, They were unavailable. And, you know, Baffert thinks, okay, War Emblem in 2002 was one of the meanest horses I ever had. And Victor got along with him, and they got along well enough to win the first two legs of the Triple Crown. So let's get him. So, you know, that's what I started reporting it out and connecting the dots of the magic and the bad luck that turned into be good luck and the misses and near misses. That's where the fun of these books are.
And you have to ask the question, and I asked it repeatedly as I was reading the book even, is how much of it is the dynamic of these three and how much of it is the horse?
It's a horse, and nobody can dispute that. It is a great horse. And when I sat down, I said, remember, people fell in love with the horse. The horse is the one who gave us chills. And, you know, it's silly to say you're writing a biography of a horse, but really you are. And there's points in his career when he's a weanling, 4 months old. He shows up at the Vinery, a farm in central Kentucky, and Frances Relihan, you know, a horsewoman through and through from Ireland who's seen tens of thousands of horses, who's with them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. She sees something in this. At this point, he's called the Little Princess Emma colt because they don't name him until after their two-year-old year. And she says, man, there's something about him. She's on taking her evening jog one day, sees him out in the field. And I got a picture in the book, and he's like a pint-sized American Pharoah. It's kind of neat to see. And he's bucking, and he's swirling, and he's playing, and he's happy. And then he takes off running. And that's where she saw the perfect mechanics he had, the efficiency of motion. He was incredibly balanced, incredibly strong, and just kind of looked like a piston firing across there. There was nothing that took your eye away and said, ooh, that's kind of an ugly stride. It was just beautiful. It was enthralling. And, you know, she did something she hadn't done prior and hadn't done since. She called up Zion and said, you know, this Little Princess Emma colt's something special. I wish you really good luck with him.
You talk about in the book, there were so many near misses as far as this particular story coming to be. One of them is that you, as you mentioned, Ahmed Zayat was a gambler and owed a lot of people a lot of money. His stable went bankrupt and at one point tried to sell American Pharoah.
Yeah, right up there in our region, in Saratoga, where we all love to go, the Fezzik Tippin sale. This was near the end of 2011. He had to settle it by the end of the year. Everybody told him that this yearling was something special. You know, this day and age, Joe, they can, like, sonogram and look and scope and measure everything. And the guys that he had, Jeff Cedar and Patty Miller, they looked at this foal or this yearling at this point and said his heart was A++, his vascular system was through the roof, his respiratory system. They said, don't sell this horse, sell your house. He's the one who's going to get you out. But he didn't listen, and so he sends him up to Saratoga, and by sheer luck, the yearling who ends up being American Pharoah bangs his ankle, they think, in the van, and has this little balloon, this little swollen ankle and cut, and just scared everybody off. You know, you've been over there in the mornings where you bring them out of the barns and you walk them around, and nobody wanted them after that. So they run them through the ring. They got a few guys, like all of them do, trying to run up the bid, and it never really starts. It runs to $300,000. Mr. Zayat has to say, hey, I take them back. So, you know, there but the gross of God goes the Triple Crown winner to somebody else's barn.
Last year, where this horse wins the Triple Crown, suffers a serious injury to his knee, and both Bob Baffert and Zayat both think that the horse will never run again.
Yeah, he overextended his knee. The first concern was they thought the Triple Crown was out of it, that they couldn't get him ready in that shortest time span. And as it went on, they thought, man, he may never get it back to the racetrack. You have such a narrow window in the Triple Crown. And, you know, Charlie Winningham said, horses are like strawberries. They can go bad at any time. And so they were used to these kind of terrible things happen. But, you know, Baffert, and this is something that he talks about, he was at the place in his career and his, I guess, karmic mental head where he knew what to do with this horse. And here he said to me, he said, you know, I get this horse 20 years ago. I don't know enough to make this happen. And he did a couple smart things. He kept them in his barn at Santa Anita, because when you send them to the farm, they tend to get fat and tend to get a little lazy, and you spend time whipping them back. So they walked them around his shed row day after day, putting a little weight on them, you know, nursing it back. And, you know, when they, in February, when they put them back on the racetrack, they didn't know what to expect. And little by little, they start getting indications that he's going to be okay, that he's looking all right. And here we are 7 months later talking about him.
We all know what happened in the Triple Crown, winning the Kentucky Derby, winning the Preakness, winning the Belmont Stakes. Because this is our region, I do want to talk about what happened in Saratoga.
They're off in the Travers. And American Pharoah had a great start. He goes straight to the front, and Frosted is away well. And Frosted is just to the outside of the Triple Crown winner early.
There are so many interesting plot lines there, but I guess the most interesting one is, why bring him to Saratoga in the first place?
And that's a great question. And that, to me, his, even though he lost in Saratoga, was the greatest thing about his campaign. Bob Baffert didn't want to go to Saratoga. He hadn't had tremendous luck in Saratoga. It's a tough track, as people know up there. It's deep. You're really catching the finest horses in the world, or in training at that point. He had just run 3 weeks earlier at Haskell. And, you know, the Haskell, he's won like 9 of the last 10 because it's a lesser field. If he goes to the Travers, he has trouble going into the Breeders' Cup. You got about 15 weeks to kill instead of running something in September and then you having 6 weeks in. So he didn't really want to do it initially. Zayat, there was a $2 million bonus if he won the Travers, just as there been with the Haskell, just as there was a $4 million on the Breeders' Cup Classic. So he had financial incentives. But also, and I do genuinely believe this, everyone in that camp knew this was a once-in-a-lifetime horse, and in the spirit of sportiness and of nod to the old days, wanted to share him and wanted to share him around the country and wanted to share him most of all at basically what I call the Vatican of American horse racing, Saratoga. I mean, I was up there for the weeks before. It was all anybody was talking about is, would he come? Would he come? When they announced it, the place erupted. I was at the track at noon. There were high fives and a standing ovation. And when he got there, the Friday before the race is probably one of my greatest memories in horse racing. Baffert and Zayat generously said, let's hold a public workout Friday before the races. And sure enough, 8 in the morning, 15, 20,000 people had filled the grandstand like it was an afternoon just to watch this horse go around. And it was the way they filled it up. It was reverence. It was like they know horses in Saratoga, and they wanted to see the great horse, and they respected the great horse. And it was really sort of awe-inspiring. I was standing behind Baffert, who was leaning on the rail, and he kind of would look at the horse, and then he'd look back at the stands, and, you know, you could tell he was deeply moved by it. And the next morning, even after he lost, he said, this was the best thing I've ever done. This is one of the best moments I've ever had in horse racing. I couldn't have taken this horse to Parks, which is the Pennsylvania Derby, where he would have got paid a lot of money to beat up on nobody. That's, to me, the greatest moment of his campaign. Saratoga, if you got to lose, you lose nobly and gallantly, as he did in Saratoga. You know, that's a whole quirky situation, Joe. The regular rider of Frosted gets thrown 2 races before, gets taken to the hospital. They put in a replacement jock in 30 minutes, Jose Lascano, a very good rider. He takes it on his own to change the tactics and run hard and at American Pharoah for the whole race rather than come from behind as he had in the past. And, you know, he fights off that. It's really sort of a roughly ridden race. Very legal, very, you know, ethical tactics, but just a tough race. He puts Frosted and Lascano away. Looks like he's going to get in and win the Travers, the Midsummer Derby, collect his bonus, and in comes Keen Ice just loping in. American Pharoah had too much taken out of him. It just gets by, and you know, I was standing on the line, and you got the feeling if American Pharoah would have saw him sooner, he would have had one more burst to hold him up.
And as they turn for home, American Pharoah has lost the lead at the top of the stretch. Frosted on the outside is now in front, but American Pharoah is battling on from the inside. He's showing all this fight with one furlong to run, and here on the far outside comes King. Frosted was third, and Upstart was fourth, and a final time of 201.57 seconds. The Graveyard of Champions has claimed another.
I mean, I was standing not far from where you were on that Travers day. First of all, I've never heard a gasp like that in a racetrack.
Right.
A collective gasp, which was, I mean, very cool, actually, but... Don't you think everybody thought, I mean, even Baffert to some sense, even though he sensed some trouble, that there would be that burst, that he'd still be able to bring it out in the end?
Absolutely. I did. You did. He did. That's what was stunning. That's why the gas came. And, you know, again, I'm convinced he just didn't see him. You know, then there's the thing, Joe, and especially up there, the Graveyard of Champions, all the great ones get beat. Secretariat got beat. Affirm got beat. Seattle Slough got beat, so a great deal of them happened up there at Saratoga. So, you know, in a way, it's sort of a perfect ending. Is his reputation one diminished in Saratoga's as the premier racetrack and graveyard of the champions was still intact?
My final Saratoga question to you is, does that help or hurt the racetrack of having that reputation, of even somebody like Bob Baffert questioning whether they should come to Saratoga because of that reputation?
No, it helps them. And, you know, it's one that's been earned, honestly. I mean, it's the oldest track in America. Everybody's come through there. It's had a lot of opportunity for upsets. It's the place everybody wants to be in the summer, who love horses, who know the horses, who adore the horses. And you go up there counting on seeing the best competition from the best stables, the best riders, the best trainers. And, you know, Baffert, he may not like it, but he keeps showing up there, so it doesn't really scare him away. And, you know, here was a guy who had the perfect excuse to not come to Saratoga. He could have said, I just ran 3 weeks ago off a layoff. He's not where I want him to be. I need 3 extra weeks to run either the Gold Cup in Belmont or the Pennsylvania Derby, so I have him fit and ready for the Breeders' Cup Classic because that's really the race we want to win. And, you know, he didn't do it. He went against his better judgment. His mind said, don't do it, and his heart said, you got to do it.
As we wrap up, let's talk about the 37 years that it took for this story to happen with American Pharoah. Do you see that as just showing how hard it is to win the Triple Crown and how hard it is to find a horse this special? Or do you think to yourself, well, you know, we may see one this year, we may see one next year?
Yeah, that's a good question. I answer the second part, it's incredibly hard. There's only been 12 over 158 years plus. All the horses that have won it have been deserving. I mean, you can argue American Pharoah versus Secretariat or whichever way you want to do it. And to me, all that means is they all deserve to be in the same sentence. Everybody's going to have an argument to make, and that's fine. You know, it's a different era. It's taken 37 years when the Seattle Slough, Affirmed, and Secretariat ran. They ran against smaller fields of basically the same competition, 6, 7, 8 horses, the same 6 or 7 or 8 horses. The owners treated it more as a pastime. So if they didn't have a horse that they didn't think belonged, they wouldn't put them in. Now, horses are owned by syndicates. So it's good to advertising, even if you're 50-1 on the board, to get your horse in there. In the old days, they didn't lay in wait for the Belmont. They usually ran all 3 legs. So you have a horse trying to go the 3 longest distance in his life at 3 different racetracks in 3 different places against fuller, fresher fields. So that's one, it's hard. Second, you have the whole breed aspect of it. Does auctions and the monies has commodified these horses, so the emphasis is on speed and caution. They're more fragile, so you take them away from the racetrack as soon as they can earn some money as a stallion. And there's less of them. The foal crops are down significantly. So you have all those things. Now, are we going to have another one this year or next 5 or 8 years? The odds say so. I mean, it was 25 before Secretariat, between Citation and Secretariat. It's 37 now. You know, in sequencing, I have an 11-year-old, and I remember going to preschool, and they taught us sequencing. And the sequence says, yes, there's the odds are. Now, do we want one? And that's the thing I'm wrestling with right now is even before this, I've always rooted for the Derby horse to win the Preakness because there's nothing better than a Belmont with a Triple Crown at the stake. And I will root for that again. But I guess selfishly, because I was so turned on by it and feel so, you know, good about it, I'd like a little bit of time for us to appreciate American Pharoah a little longer here. And again, I've got a book out there, and I guarantee you if Nyquist wins this year or anybody else, I won't write volume two.
Well, I'll tell you, in the meantime, this is a great way to honor this horse and to enjoy the great story. It's American Pharoah, the untold story of the Triple Crown winner's legendary rise. It is published by Hachette. Joe Drape, always a pleasure. Thank you very much for being with us.
Joe Donahue, thank you, sir.
Again, the name of the book is American Pharoah, the untold story of the Triple Crown winner's legendary rise. It's published by Hachette. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.